fuel sources, woodboilers.com.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Granite State farmers are cheering the recent signing of a new federal farm bill, which took more than 3 years to cultivate and involved tons of political fertilizer and weed pulling. The bill funds agriculture and food assistance programs for the next 5 years to the tune of $900 billion. Critics say it continues what they call corporate welfare for big ag, while at the same time cuts food stamps. Still, the measure did pass with bipartisan support, and many New Hampshire farmers say there's a lot to like, including a revamped dairy program, more money aimed at bolstering local foods, and a new effort to encourage New England maple syrup production. These changes come as New Hampshire farmers as a whole are changing. New numbers suggest that those who work the land here are getting older, their farms smaller, but at the same time, more residents are pursuing careers in agriculture. Today in The Exchange, what's happening down on the farm in the Granite State? Let's hear from you if you're involved in this field. What are some of the struggles you face? What are the benefits of being a farm in New Hampshire? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, or post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange, all one word. With us in studio, Lorraine Merrill, Commissioner for New Hampshire's Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. Her family also owns a dairy operation in Stratham. Commissioner Merrill, nice to see you. Thank you for being here.
Good morning, Laura.
Also with us, Janet Wilkinson, Executive Director of the Northeast Organic Farming Association of New Hampshire. And Janet, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And joining us from Maine, Ned Porter. He assists the New England Farmers Union on issues related to the Farm Bill. He also served for a decade as Deputy Commissioner of the Maine Department of Agriculture. And Ned Porter, welcome. Good to have you.
Thank you very much.
Well, and Janet, I want to start with you for just a little profile of who is farming today in New Hampshire. I gave a little preview in my introduction, including the fact that more residents are getting into this.
Mm-hmm. The agriculture census results just came out for the most recent census, which was in 2012. And what we can take from that, it's the preliminary data, so it's very basic, but it's majority of farms are in the middle range of 10 to 500 acres. They're in the middle economic category. We don't have many large farms here in New Hampshire. They're mostly white, and they're mostly in the middle to older age range.
Yeah, older age range, upper 50s, so mm-hmm. getting close to that retirement age.
Right.
Is the concern that younger people are not waiting in the wings, that there's not enough younger folks in their 20s and 30s who might want to take over once the older farmers retire?
I think looking at a regional level, we're seeing a huge increase in new farmers, actually. Not necessarily all young, but people who are wanting to find farming as a career, part-time or full-time.
Yeah.
Some are retiring into it, some are actually looking to do it full-time out of college. So so I think we're seeing that changing, but there is a lack of beginning farmers, definitely.
That is interesting, this big number, huge number, you said, Janet, of new farmers. Who are these new farmers, Commissioner Merrill?
It's very interesting, Laura. It's a really diverse group. We do have quite a few young people interested in farming and getting started in farming. The growth in the census, the 2012 ag census that Janet just referred to, we had an increase in farmers in the 25 to 34 year age group, and as well as in the older age groups, we also saw increases.
The people who are retiring young and wanted to get into this.
Right, the second career changers, it's really reflects all of that range, people who are at various points in their careers. And there's strong interest in the colleges and universities in agriculture. We're seeing those programs, and that's really a national trend. It's not just here in New Hampshire and New England. We did have a 5% increase in the number of farms with this census, as opposed to the national figure of it was minus 4.5%. So that's nearly a 10% difference in here in New Hampshire and New England
So we're kind of flipping the trends on their heads then, Commissioner Merrill. The trend nationally is farms are getting bigger, but there's fewer of them. In New Hampshire and New England, they're getting smaller, but there's more of them.
That's pretty much what we're seeing. And the other thing I think we need to remember is that the census counts, when they count the age, they're counting the senior operator in a given farm. And so whether that's could be a couple or it could be a multi-generation family. So we often have younger farmers in those existing family farm operations that aren't showing up in that average age.
I see. So the parents could still be running the farm. The kids could be waiting in the wings, but they're not counted in that census.
They could be even full partners in the farm at that point. And they would be counted as an operator, but not as the principal operator that gets used for the average age of the principal operator or the gender of the principal operator.
Well, and Ned Porter, you're in Maine, but also working on New England farm issues. What are you seeing in terms of who's in charge and who may take over in the next decade or so?
Well, the new-to-farming people tend to be, in my observations, college-educated. Not the intergenerational transfers on the farm, but the new-to-farming or the younger college-educated. And the reason, in my estimation, the farms that are coming online in New England are smaller is that cohort is taking advantage of the local and regional food systems and the interest in that to address a direct market, direct-to-restaurant, in terms of providing fruits and vegetables and varieties of meats and cheeses that aren't necessarily available through the customary wholesale chains. So it's a combination of farmers or people who are new to farming and taking advantage of an opportunity that presents itself in New England the way it does, doesn't really elsewhere because of the compact nature of the region.
You know, in a moment I want to ask you what the Farm Bill might mean given this profile of New England farmers that you all are putting forward. But let me also invite our listeners to join us. The exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. Give us a call as we look at the state of New Hampshire farming today. 1-800-892-6477. So given this profile, and Commissioner Merrill, I'll start with you. What does the Farm Bill mean for New Hampshire farmers in particular?
Well, it means a number of things. We don't have the big farm crop, program crops, as they're called.
Soybeans, corn,
cotton, you know, sugar, all of that. So for us, the biggest and most important parts are the dairy program and the specialty crops block grant program and related things. And conservation programs are extremely important for us in New Hampshire and the Northeast. And also there are more in this Farm Bill, some additional or enhanced funding for the local food systems kind of work, including increasing the benefits for food program recipients such as SNAP or WIC.
Food stamps.
To get more farmers market coupon benefits and things like that.
Yeah, so you can use SNAP benefits now at farmers markets.
You used
to not be able to do that.
Yes.
Yeah.
We've increased the access at the farmers markets. They have to be able to take the electronic cards, which also enables the farmers markets to take credit cards or debit cards. So it enhances the convenience for all kinds of customers.
Yeah, and about the Farm Bill, what do you think of the critique, all of you, maybe you first, Ned Porter, since this is what you work on, the critique that this bill does continue support for what many call corporate ag, you know, the big giant farms out in the Midwest and West, while cutting food stamps? That's been a critique on the left of this Farm Bill. What do you think, Ned?
Well, the support for conventional agriculture did not continue in terms of direct payments. They changed that and made the support a risk-based insurance. They subsidized the insurance. And that's an improvement. Rather than just straight payments, it's based on risk and hedging risk. The cuts, $8 billion in cuts to the food stamp program over the life of the Farm Bill, is severe. And it hurts principally the Northeast the most. because it's tied to a low-income home energy assistance program. There was a linkage between the two, and it changed that a little bit. But it was the $8 billion in cuts was far better than what was approved by the Republican House, which was $39 billion in cuts. So it's not as good as it could have been, but it's a whole lot better than it could have been as well.
Well, that's what New Hampshire Representative Anne McLean Custer said when she came on. Not perfect, but not bad either. What sort of a grade would you give this farm bill, Ned Porter, especially with your interest in New England?
And you said it, of the billions and billions spent over the life of it, $1.2 billion is investments in the very things that Commissioner Merrill was talking about in terms of what's really important for New England in terms of local food systems, organic agriculture, and beginning farmers and dairy. So I'm not sure C-plus.
C-plus. Wow, not that impressive.
Well,
a gentleman's C.
B-minus, C-plus. I don't know. It's there's good things, and they didn't go as far as they could have, like in some of the conservation programs. But on the whole, there's a lot to be liked.
Janet, what do you think? You dare give this farm bill a grade?
I'm on board with Ned there. I think that for New Hampshire, a lot of the biggest spending pieces of the farm bill don't do much for our agriculture, since we're growing, as we talked about earlier, in small farms, and we're decreasing in large farms. So what the sustainable agriculture community would like to see is more direct subsidy type support to make those smaller farms viable.
All right. And in just a moment, more conversation. And Commissioner Merrill, I'll have you make the case as to why farmers need federal support in the first place. We'll talk about that in just a moment and start taking your calls. 1-800-892-6477. If you're involved in farming in the Granite State, or if you love to support your local farmers, give us a call. Tell us what you see. What struggles do you see local agriculture facing? What might help it survive and thrive? 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 919. Good morning. NHPR is trying to keep our upcoming March fund drive as brief as possible, which is why on day one of the drive, we're planning to raise the entire day's goal in just 4 hours. Your donation now will count toward the tally and help us collect $10,000 in challenge money. Support the new service you love at nhpr.org. More on the state of farming in New Hampshire on The Exchange and at 10 on The Diane Rehm Show, the crisis in Ukraine and President Obama's foreign policy. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and from Merrimack County Savings Bank, helping the community thrive for over 145 years with 7 full-service branches in Bow, Kentucky, Concord, and Nashua, themerrimack.com. And the Shaheen and Gordon Law Firm, business and corporate law, health care, family matters, criminal defense, and personal injury, offices in Dover, Concord, and Manchester, shaheengordon.com. 920, this is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, the state of New Hampshire's farms. We're looking at some of the details of the farm bill, how it will affect farmers here in northern New England, also some of the results of the recent agriculture census and what those numbers tell us about who's farming today in our region. 1-800-892-6477 is the number for you to join us. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange. All one word. Our guests are Commissioner Lorraine Merrill, head of the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. She also owns a dairy operation in Stratham. Ned Porter's with us. He assists the New England Farmers Union on issues related to the Farm Bill. He's a past deputy commissioner at the Maine Department of Agriculture. And Janet Wilkinson is here, executive director of the Northeast Organic Farming Association of New Hampshire. And just before the break, Commissioner Merrill, I said I was going to ask you this question, so here it is. Why do farmers even need federal support? $900 billion over 5 years, that's a lot of money. Make the case that farmers need federal assistance when other types of businesses
remember that
don't.
80% of the farm bill spending is on food assistance programs and not programs for farmers.
Yes, and that's a point that's often made and worth remembering.
So, but as to, it's really been, you know, it's a political decision that has been made over the history of our government that rather than ask for necessarily consumers to pay the full price of what it costs to produce food, that some of these broader costs are shared. An example is the conservation programs. People like to find the least expensive options in their food purchases much of the time, and therefore it doesn't cover those external kinds of costs of environmental protection and things like that. People, farmers can't afford to invest in the soil and water conservation that they want to and feel they should if they're only paid what they're getting from the marketplace for that food. So that's why our government and our elected representatives have chosen to help farmers with meeting those kinds of needs. And farmers are very many small businesses selling into very concentrated markets, bigger buyers. Even when we talk about those larger farms, you know, those amorphous larger farms out in the West or Midwest, compared to the businesses that they're selling products to, they're small family-run businesses. And so they're at a disadvantage in the marketplace and often selling perishable products, whether it's fresh lettuces or milk. So farmers are kind of at the mercy of the markets, and those combined.
I'd like to hear from everybody on this question, actually, because it does come up a lot, especially when these farm bills are passed. You know, other business people say, hey, I'm not getting special treatment. What do you think, Janet?
Yeah, I have just on the conservation piece, it's actually a really interesting figure that half of our landmass in the lower 48 is privately owned crop, pasture, and rangeland. And another 20% of that is privately owned forest land. So these conservation programs are really doing a lot to strengthen and improve our working lands around the country. So
keeping open space open.
Exactly. And healthy and generative for the environment and for the planet. Also, with the smaller programs that New Hampshire agriculture does benefit from, a lot of these programs are new. They're fairly new within the last 10 years. So the support of the federal government to get them off the ground and to get them accepted in communities and regions is really helpful.
Ned,
maybe they
thoughts?
Won't last
yeah.
forever, but it's great.
Ned, your thoughts, and then we'll go to our listeners.
Sure. I just echo Commissioner Merrill's observations. I mean, the farm programs grew out of the Dust Bowl the need to stabilize the soil, stabilize family farms, and stabilize rural economies. And as a policy objective, they've done that mighty well. And when you layer on top of that the support for the land-grant institutions and all the benefits of research, education, research, and extension, it's done a phenomenal job of advancing the policy goal of strengthening rural America. And I just... there's a quote from President Kennedy I like. As a small businessman, farmers are the only small businessmen that buy retail and sell wholesale. And that gets to the market dynamics that the commissioner was talking about.
In terms of the inputs, the fertilizer, the fuel, you're buying retail, in other words, paying full price, but selling wholesale.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's take some calls if we could. Again, the number here in the exchange, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. And let's go to Hudson first. Patty's on the air. Hi, Patty. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
How are you? Hi. I'm calling from Hudson. I'm on the school board in Hudson, and we have Alvern High School is one of the only schools that has a running dairy farm. And our problem has been in the past couple of years, we've had a lack of interest from the students to go into the agricultural program and the dairy farm. And I just would love some ideas, and we'd love somebody to try to help us in trying to beef up our program so that we can continue the sustainable farming, because it's huge now. And we just need a direction to go in, or if there's someone out there that would love to help us, we would welcome it.
Wow, Patty, great to hear from you. And Commissioner Merrill, from what I understand, there's a broad consumer desire for local milk and organic milk. So there might be a consumer demand out there, but Patty says her high schoolers aren't interested in dairy farming.
Patty, this is Lorraine. And first of all, thank you for serving on your local school board. I know I did that years ago, too. and I have visited Alvern High School many times. You've got a great facility there and programs really to be proud of. And I know in the past, there has been a lot of interest in the livestock there, and you've had some veterinary students that have graduated and gone on to veterinary school and so forth. We'd love to talk with you offline about maybe some thoughts on increasing interest or getting some more farm involvement in the community.
Yeah, and what do you think, just broadly, Janet, without addressing the specifics of Hudson, this idea of, you know, getting teenagers interested in this so that you've got this pipeline of people coming into agriculture?
I think it's an area that we can focus on in this state, especially. We have a strong agricultural history, and I think we're experiencing growth in the older age groups, but I agree that it's something we can focus on.
I mean, is that something that your organization, NOFA, is involved in? Or
we are more involved in garden initiatives. We are part of a new school and youth garden education network that's teaching people how to teach about gardening. So that's pretty exciting, but not specifically in dairy right now.
All right. Well, Patty, good luck, and thank you for calling. I want to bring another voice into our conversation. This is Ryan Visda. She and her husband started a full-time pastured meat operation in New Hampshire in 2010, only to find they had to take on other jobs to pay the bills. Ryan and her husband are currently taking a year-long hiatus to work in real estate, collect capital for a new farming endeavor. Ryan, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So, Ryan, what happened?
Well, we threw ourselves full-time into this business and learned really quick that it's not a very wise thing to do. There's just so many aspects to farming where you need money, lots of money, just to start the farm and then keep the farming going. And what you're getting in return is not nearly enough. You need a big nest egg to get started.
Wow. So you didn't realize how much capital you were going to need just to start this thing full-time.
Exactly. And I'm seeing it a lot now with people that are getting into farming. We're working in land access a lot. And our first thing that we do is hand a cash flow summary. You're going to buy this land. You're going to buy this house. You own a farm. Let's look at your monthly expenditures just on your land and your house, not even on your farm business. And helping people understand that there's just a lot of capital that you need in order to start a farm.
And Ryan, I'm not picking on you with this next question, okay? But
okay.
Why didn't you know that before you threw yourselves into it? Why didn't you understand the numbers before?
I think I was being really idealistic, and I saw in New Hampshire our beginning farmer community was, you know, just beginning to start, and I felt like I could access those markets, I could get in there, I could do it. And I quickly learned that there's a whole lot more work that needs to be done in order to make it a full-time job right away.
You know, we hear a lot about burgeoning local farmers markets, even winter farmers markets. We hear about a desire for local meat that isn't being met, a desire for organic milk that's not being met. But here you are on the other end not being able to make it. So what's the disconnect there between this apparent consumer demand for meat and milk and produce? And yet,
it's the cost,
you know, yeah. Go
the
ahead.
Cost of doing business.
Sure.
Just to raise a pig and then be able to sell a pork chop, I have to bring it to a USDA facility, which is 2 hours away from my farm. And then, you know, it's a higher cost. I'm feeding organic feed that's twice as much as conventional. And then when it comes down to it, my pork chop is $12 a pound, and maybe I'm making a dollar or two per pork chop. And then, you know, the customer base is not used to paying $12 a pound for a pork chop. So that alone, the cost of me to get that pork chop to the table and then trying to convince the consumer that there's a value there in that $12 pork chop.
Wow. That's a great example, Ryan.
Thank you.
So what would help you get around that $12 pork chop? And I understand, boy, you've got high input costs, you've got regulations, you've got not enough of an infrastructure in place to help you process that meat. What would help you be more successful next time around?
Go slower and build a stronger immediate community of a market. So reach out to my neighbors in my town and kind of stay very hyper-local versus, you trying to get into the bigger markets where you need to have that retail product. Maybe start a business model that's just on CSA shares versus retail business.
Interesting. And maybe one of you keep your day job for the time being.
Yes, exactly.
Well, what else, Ryan, would have helped? I mean, a little more support from the state or from local farming organizations or from the university or the USDA? I mean, are there other institutions that you feel could have helped you out a little bit with some of the initial hurdles?
I think if I was starting today, I'd be very well supported with, you know, the Beginning Farmer Program through NOFA. Ray Conner has done an excellent job just building community and support and education. And I think in the mentorship and the Journey Person program, I think has been an excellent addition to the scene. And just there's been a group of us that have been community building over the last 4 years. And I think if I would have started today, I'd have a lot more perspective to see versus 4 years ago. The Beginning Farmer community wasn't networked as strong as it is now.
What's next for you then, Ryan, you and your husband?
Right now we're focusing on real estate. We're working a lot in land access. We're collaborating with NOFA, Land for Good, and a lot of land access organizations. We do these land access information sessions, and we're just building capital so eventually we can buy a bigger piece of land and start slow and have another farming enterprise.
All right, Ryan, good luck. Thank you very much for sharing your story with us today. We really
appreciate
it.
Thanks for having me.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's Ryan Vizda. Again, she and her husband started a full-time meat operation a couple years back, only to find out that it wasn't quite working out, but they plan to jump back in, as we heard. And Commissioner Merrill, I can see you want to jump in on Ryan's story there. It's a great story.
It is a great story, and it's very illustrative. This is a tough business. You asked previously, why do farmers need any kind of support? It's a very tough business. It's extremely narrow profit margins if you can get them. People really need to know what they're getting into. There are many educational opportunities out there provided by UNH Cooperative Extension, especially also by our farm credit organizations, Farm Credit East, serving the six eastern counties, and Yankee Farm Credit, which serves the Connecticut Valley counties. To give farmers that kind, or would-be farmers, the kind of background they need to have a business plan to get started in this, help with financing and so forth.
Yeah, there's the business end. You love farming, but there's also that hard cash component, isn't it?
If people subscribe to our weekly market bulletin, that's one way of getting the information as to when those programs are offered. Some of them are going right now.
Ned, I wonder what you pull out of Ryan's story. Again, beginning farmers, throwing themselves into it full-time, and then realizing they need a little more cash than they thought they would.
Well, I think the absolute necessity of a thorough and comprehensive and investment-ready business plan, encouraging would-be operators to go through that process is a learning experience for them. And it also, at the end, if it's done right, gives them a document that they can walk into their local banks, credit unions, or firm credit offices and sit down with the and walk through the financials and see what works. And I think that's just essential. And sort of on the aside from firm credit, I found there a dwindling number of bankers and banks in New England that have expertise in farming, agriculture generally.
That's interesting.
And I think, at least in Maine, we found that to be a problem. Ryan is absolutely right. The support for new and beginning farmers is growing over time. And this most recent farm bill invests more in that than any previous farm bills. So there is recognition in federal policymakers that this is an area of agriculture that is worthy and deserving of investment.
Did you want to jump in, Janet?
Yeah. As Ned said, the mentorship, training, capital networking is all there, but really our farm policies favor conglomerates and larger farms. So it's up to us as communities to kind of subsidize people like Ryan by helping organize cooperative marketing for farmers and even by paying more for food so that, you know, this idea of small farms being the security for food in states can you know, come to the forefront.
I thought it was interesting, too, what she said when she goes for it again, she may go hyper-local, not mm-hmm. even thinking about supermarkets, grocery stores, but just neighbors, community, CSAs, and so forth. So that's an interesting business strategy. Let's go back to our listeners. And Jim is calling from Dalton. Hi, Jim. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange.
Hi, Laura. Let me just get away from the radio here.
Okay. Go ahead, Jim. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much. It's a very important program. We live up in Coos County, and there's sort of a set of characteristics here that I wondered if your panelists could comment on. There's almost a, I guess I'd call it a land rush for high quality farmland, particularly hay fields and corn growing land. And we find that farmers who are smaller are essentially getting priced out of the market. We own some hay fields. We make them available to small farmers who are just unable to pay the market price. And so my question is there a way to target assistance to smaller farmers who really can't compete with these industrial scale operations that have bid up land prices so high?
Yeah, Jim, thanks for the question. Commissioner Merrill, that's for you.
Well, you certainly do have a market situation here where people compete for price and value, and sellers want to sell for the best price they can get. There are some programs such as the USDA Farm Service Agency has loans for beginner farmers or socially disadvantaged, low limited resource farmers get a really favorable interest rate situation and financing
from the USDA.
From the USDA.
So they don't have to worry about the banks.
Correct. Or yes, and sometimes they may be guaranteed loans where they work with Farm Credit or a bank if a bank will deal. But some of them are just outright loans from. So that's one place to start.
Okay. Thanks a lot for that call, Jim. Again, the number if you want to join us with your questions, comments, personal experiences with farming in New Hampshire, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 939. Good morning.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the crisis in Ukraine and President Obama's foreign policy. Then, a new novel about girls abducted by Ugandan rebels. All coming up on the Diane Rehm Show.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 till noon on NHPR. New Hampshire weather sunny and cold for today with high temperatures low to mid-20s. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and from the Colonial Theater in Keene, presenting the Chieftains in an early celebration of St. Patrick's Day on Tuesday, March 11th at 7:30. Tickets and information at thecolonial.org. Impact World Mutual Fund's a leader in sustainable investing, integrating environmental, social, and governance factors into investment analysis and decision-making. PactsWorld.com for tomorrow. 9:40, this is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, the Farm Bill, the Agriculture Census, and the State of New Hampshire's farms. We invite you to join us now with your thoughts. Call in 1-800-892-6477. Send an email to exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Twitter at NHPR Exchange or post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. And Commissioner Merrill, Ned Porter, Janet Wilkinson, let's go right back to our callers. And Amy's waiting in Concord. Hi, Amy. You're on the air. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me, Laura.
Sure, go ahead.
So I am the interim president of NOFA New Hampshire, and I'm so glad you're talking about this topic today. One of the things we think about a lot is how, and we've touched on this, especially with Ryan's call, how are we going to make sure the next generation of farms are operational in New Hampshire, given these two critical differences that we've skirted around, but I want to really call out. So there's a drastic decrease in the amount of people who are inheriting farms. And that does two things. One, they need to pay for the farm, the silos, the tractors, the soil, the farmstead. And number two, they didn't get that childhood on the farm that gives a certain sensibility and know-how. So there's two things that they're coming to farming without them having those things that people in the past had. It was more of a natural transaction.
Sure. So a lot of costs and not as much experience. Go ahead. Yeah.
And what we've been talking about, I've been listening to the conversation, is basically 100% commercial financing. Now, that's just not going to be possible for every new farmer. So I would love to hear your guest comment on how to get through that impasse and get these new farmers who don't come with the attributes of farmers of the past onto our farmland.
Wow, it's a great question. Thank you very much, Amy. Ned Porter, do you want to tackle that?
I think there are a variety of tools to help that, engaging new and beginning farmers, engaging with landowners on lease-to-own arrangements, working with a land trust and a landowner and a new farmer to buy, protect, and sell, where the land trust would buy a conservation easement. The current landowner would get the benefits of that and then sell to a beginning farmer at less than market rate because the difference is covered by the easement. So there are mechanisms available, but they're not easy. They're not rapidly scalable, but they are there. In terms of the sort of the heritage, that's just the networking, the beginning farmer networks, the outreach, working with Extension. And I think those are the two things I'd lay on the table.
Okay. Ned, thank you very much. And thank you, Amy, for the call. Let's take another one. This is John in Colebrook. Hi, John. Thanks for waiting. You're on The Exchange. Go ahead.
Well, good morning. First, it's really neat, again, to have an agricultural commissioner who actually milks cows. I wonder where else in the country that happens. But back to the demise of large animal herd-based farming, I think one thing that people tend to not even be aware of is that we are losing our openings. The old timers who cleared the land always called them openings. Fields and pastures that are out of reach of big animal-intensive operations are growing up before our eyes. And particularly in the North Country, we are losing what the tourism people call our view sheds. View shed is an overworked term, but you can't see anything from under 30 feet of trees. And I can take anybody from down below the notches on a truck tour of this territory up here, a huge territory, one-third of the state's landmass, and show you clearing after clearing, field after pasture, growing up before our eyes because there is no economic incentive to keep them open. We're losing our dairy farms left and right. And it's very nice that small farms are popping up. That's very heartening. And we're great supporters of that, especially the local VOR movement. But with the loss of animal-intensive farming, we are losing our openings, which people tend to take for granted. And I've long advocated that part of the rooms and meals tax should go to some kind of incentive for landowners to keep those openings open. Right now, there is virtually none.
John, thanks a lot for the call. And, you know, Commissioner Merrill, when people go to Vermont, you know, they drive over the hill and then there's this beautiful opening and you see the cows in the field and it's just a nice view. You know, the tourists love that. And John's right. In New Hampshire, it's more trees and more trees and more trees. And nothing against trees, but he's right.
Well,
there's a lot less of these openings than there used to be.
That's right. And the openings are exactly it's the mix of open land, farmed land with the trees that creates the beauty of New Hampshire. John's call is very much on point. In Switzerland, you know, they do actually pay farmers to keep those alpine pastures open, keeping cows grazing up there because they understand the impact for their whole country's economy. And I get his point.
That postcard image. They do that in Vermont, too. Don't they pay dairy farmers to some extent?
Well, it's not quite that simple, but it's yeah. They do have some more benefits than we have here in New Hampshire. I think that John's call in juxtaposition with Jim's call from Dalton, who was kind of complaining about the large dairy farms competing for the use or either ownership or leasing of the open farmland to raise hay and corn crops for their herds. So if you just go a little further north, you see that demand isn't there, and it's a negative. So I think that's a good thing to keep in mind, that there are benefits to having those dairy farms, larger dairy farms that are keeping land open in many of our areas. And you just strike home the importance of dairy farming to our state. It's much larger than just the number of farms in terms of the impact on the landscape and supporting agricultural infrastructure in the state.
Now, what about trees, though? I mean, is that, you know, we see the signs, tree farm. I mean, is that considered part of New Hampshire's agriculture sector? Because we're pretty good at growing trees here.
We certainly are. We consider under the statutes Christmas tree farms is agriculture, maple, which are obviously maple trees are big trees, and that's going on right now. We're entering our maple season. That is part of agriculture, so it's a mix, and many farms have woodlots, and managing those woodlots is part of their farm business.
All right. Well, thanks for that call, John. And let's go next to Jay. Go ahead, Jay. You're on the air, and welcome.
Well, hi, Laura. How are you?
Fine.
This is Jay Finnessy, and I'm the director of the Farm Service Agency in New Hampshire, and I want to thank Lorraine for mentioning some of the programs that we have. What I'd like to inform the listeners is that we have not just direct loans or indirect loans or guaranteed loans, but we also have other lending products for new and beginning farmers, including things like a land sales contract guarantee program and microloans. And all these are designed specifically with the new and beginning farmer in mind. So I would encourage the listener, if they're interested, to call our office in Concord, which is 223-6003.
Okay. Jay, and also former state representative, active on the Agriculture Committee and so forth, as I remember.
Well, past chair, and actually considering what's going on, I'm kind of delighted I'm no longer the chair.
All right, Jay. Thanks for calling in. Did you want to jump in, Janet?
I do. We have had a really successful grouping of programs led by NOFA New Hampshire and organizations like the Farm Service Agency, where we're getting professionals from all of these resources together in a room to do very brief introductions of themselves, and getting landowners and land seekers in the room as well, and then just kind of setting everyone free to network with each other. These are called farmland access information sessions, and they've been a really good way to bring everyone together in person around the state to learn about those amazing resources like the FSA has.
So what I'm hearing from you and everybody this morning is some excitement, you know, about the farm bill and new interest and so forth, but also sounds like, Janet, some concern that, again, beginning farmers are struggling and don't have enough resources and maybe aren't connected with the resources that do exist.
Mm-hmm. And it's a big focus of NOFA New Hampshire right now. We're working on a regional grant funded by the Beginning Farmer and Rancher Development Program through the Farm Bill to promote and support beginning farmers. We also have a new program that will be contracting with advanced growers to provide technical assistance for all beginning farmers, no matter if they're NOFA members or organic certified or not, to provide any type of technical assistance they might need from an advanced grower. So we're really excited to be providing as much support and to connect beginning farmers with as many resources as we can.
That's interesting. Yesterday in the exchange, we talked about student teachers learning from longtime professionals. So mm-hmm. Here you have beginning farmers learning from the same thing,
exactly.
Mentors who've been in the field for a long time. Let's take a call from Heather in Berwick, Maine. Hi, Heather. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you. I was just calling because I'm thinking more, even a smaller scale way to educate beginning farmers. I know in our area we have lots of older folks with large farm properties that they can no longer maintain, and grow food for themselves. And we have lots of folks in this area who would like to learn, and maybe just on for community-based efforts, having the farm-to-table grants that are available to schools, connecting these kids with these folks who have this land that's farmable and have a wealth of knowledge, and putting programs together that work in that fashion. It helps the older folks maintain their property and stay in their homes. And they, I know several of my neighbors sell their produce for their heating oil in the winter.
Wow, and a little barter system there.
Yeah, and they can no longer really really do the work themselves. So my kids and I will go over and help them out. They teach us farming, and they get their produce and sell it for their heating oil.
Wow. So, Heather, making more of a connection between those older folks who maybe can't work the land as much as they would like and younger people, getting them on the farm. What do you think about that, Ned Porter?
I think those almost neighborly relations are probably as strong a solution as anything that could be provided through outside support. But again, if you're looking to move policy, is that kind of great relation, is that something you can build to scale? And I'm not sure you can, so that's why I was just looking. The Farm Bill has provided $100 million over 5 years for competitive grants for new farmer training. So I go back to, it's a combination of what happens on the ground at the local level and figuring out how to take advantage of the programs offered by USDA and Farm Service Agency and the like, and needing someone to sort of facilitate the linkage of the two.
Okay. Thanks for that call, Heather. I have a question outside, Commissioner Merrill, of this big conversation that we're having about getting beginning farmers started, younger farmers, the Farm Bill, what it means. And that has to do with the terrible droughts we've heard in some of our nation's most important growing areas, especially California. Just devastating stories there about farmers and laying off half their workers because there's nothing for them to pick. How does this affect, if at all, agriculture here in northern New England?
It's going to be interesting. Right now, I think it is a factor in our very positive milk prices that we have right now, which we haven't mentioned today. I mean, usually when I'm here, we're talking about how bad the milk prices are, and currently milk prices are more favorable than they have been in several years.
Because milk farmers in California are
That's
struggling?
That's part of it. They're not able to ramp up their production to respond to these better milk prices because of the feed shortages and the water situation. It's a bigger, it's part of a bigger picture than that. There's also great export demand for dairy products. And then there's the fruits and vegetables. California is our, it's our salad bowl. And if it's not able to supply as much fresh fruits and vegetables, where are they going to come from? Are we going to have more of them coming from here close to home, or are we going to be importing more from Latin America or Asia or wherever?
So focusing on this crisis in California and elsewhere may make people more amenable to that local food movement.
I think it's something people should really think about in terms of supporting local food producers and also in protecting farmland. It's a benefit for both making sure that people, whether they're from an existing farm families or new farmers, can afford to buy farmland, and it also ensures that it will be available to the capacity to produce food in the future.
Go ahead, Janet.
I just want to add local and organic. I do represent the Northeast Organic Farming Association, and there is some funded research in the Farm Bill and a lot of privately funded research pointing to organic farming being generative and actually building topsoil and sequestering carbon. So our trend in New Hampshire of more smaller farmers and the parallel growth of the organic food industry, I think, is a good thing for combating climate change.
So are you saying that organic farming, just by the way that it is done, isn't as subject to struggle when there's a drought?
I am saying it can help combat climate change, and that it helps to protect the soil and crops.
Let's take one more call if we could. This is Mary Jane calling from Wilmot. Hi, Mary Jane, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hello. I would like to put in a plug for agriculture in the classroom. It all begins with children, and we need to start right there. And that's been a wonderful program. People use it to teach bees and maple and grow a Three Sisters garden at the school or a Peter Rabbit garden. And you can you can include it with any curriculum you have.
All right. Mary Jane, what a way to end the program. Do you want to jump in, Commissioner Merrill?
I just want to second that emotion. Yes, it's a great program. It is comes under our department, offered jointly with many other organizations and institutions in the state. And for the first time, this budget, the legislature actually supported some funding for Ag in the Classroom. So,
wow. that's... You can't do it everywhere because I haven't heard of it in Concord, for example.
Well, I think it's been in Concord in some places.
All right. I stand corrected. Thank you very much, all of you, for being here. Commissioner Merrill, it was good to see you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.
That's Lorraine Merrill, Commissioner for New Hampshire's Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. Her family also owns a dairy operation in Stratham. Ned Porter, thank you for your time. We appreciate it.
I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Ned Porter, he assists the New England Farmers Union on issues related to the Farm Bill. He also served for a decade as Deputy Commissioner of the Maine Department of Agriculture. And Janet Wilkinson, good to see you. Thank you also.
Thank you, Laura.
Janet Wilkinson, Executive Director of the Northeast Organic Farming Association of New Hampshire. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producers are Ellen Grimm and Faith Meixel. Our volunteer is Alan Cohen. Our intern is James Pouliot. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoy, and tomorrow on The Exchange, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. After years out of office and out of state, former U.S. Senator Bob Smith launches his campaign to regain his old seat. A state Senate committee approves a 4-cent gas tax increase, while customers of Fred Fuller Oil disapprove of the company's service. And Granite State unemployment dips below 5%. Send us your thoughts by email or Facebook, and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.
The Diane Rehm Show next at 10 on New Hampshire Public Radio, where support comes from your listeners and from Capital Center for the Arts in Concord, presenting the Irish Rovers in concert, featuring music from their 36 albums, including the hit The Unicorn, March 21st at 8 p.m. Tickets at ccanh.com. And New Hampshire Magazine, this month catering to hamburger lovers with a guide to burgers across the Granite State. New Hampshire Magazine, where New Hampshire comes to you.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO Concord 89.1.
WEVS Nassau 88.3.
WEVH Hanover 91.3.
WEVN Keene 90.7.
WEVC Gorham 107.1.
WEVJ Jackson 99.5.
WEVF Colebrook 90.3.
And WEVQ Littleton 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org.
It's 10 o'clock.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Tom Gelton of NPR, sitting in for Diane Rehm. Republican senators have had sharp words for President Obama's handling of the crisis in Ukraine. John McCain said the situation with Russia is a result of feckless foreign policy. And Lindsey Graham called the president weak and indecisive. Politics as usual, perhaps,